come on to my house, I'm gonna give you candy. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you an apple and a plum and an apricot or two. Hey.
Welcome to Food for Thought. Join us for a thought-provoking glimpse into the world of the food that we savor. Meet the women and men who are growing it, foraging for it, raising it, cooking it, and who share it with the rest of us. Today's guest is David Martinek, and I met David when he was taking the Master Food Preserver program through the University of California Cooperative Extension, and he brought in some dried apples that were the most beautiful shade of red, and so I had to know more. So David, how did you end up growing apples in the first place?
A house I bought many, many years ago was on 10 acres up Lower Mitchell Road, and there was a giant pile of berry vines, and I tore the berry vines down and found apple trees underneath. That was how high they were. And so I was rehabilitating them and researching them, and one thing led to another, and I have a lot of apples today.
You fell in love with the whole idea of apples and apple trees.
Well, it's sort of neat to dig one hole, and then you come back for anywhere from 50 to 100 years and get apples.
Yeah, it's a magic tree.
It is. It's amazing. Yeah.
Where is your orchard right now?
It's in Myrtletown. It's next door to the tennis club.
Okay. And I had to actually go back and look twice because I didn't believe what I read the first time, that you have 600 apple trees.
About that, yes.
On a quarter of an acre.
Yes.
How is that possible?
It's very difficult. They're not intensively planted. I mean, there are commercial growers who will put upwards of 1,500 or 1,800 trees on an acre, but those are particular rootstocks and they're trained on trellises. I just have very poor soil. The apple trees don't get very big. And they are mainly semi-dwarfs, so they don't get huge. But in the fall, when the apples are bringing the branches down, it gets to be very difficult walking between the trees.
It must be, yeah. Now, let's talk about varieties of apples, because if you go to the store, I think people, when they think apples, pretty much there's the Fuji and the Honeycrisp in the grocery stores, and maybe a few other varieties, but you have a lot of varieties in your orchard.
Yes, I think I have maybe 60 or 70 different varieties, which is not a lot when you get addicted to apples. And some of those, for instance, I've got maybe 10 varieties of crab apples just to add to the pollen, even though I don't intend to get an apple off those trees. I just try to get a good pollen mix going in the spring. So I would say about 60 or 70 different.
And are they heirloom varieties?
Some of them are. I was looking over some of my old orchard maps, and I'm amazed at how many varieties I gave up on over the years. I've been about 20 years in this one site, and I used to have the oldest known Italian apple, the oldest known French apple, the oldest known English apple, and a lot of those heirloom varieties really aren't that good. So I only have half an acre, and I have to be kind of picky about what I plant there. So I'll plant a variety, let it fruit for 3 or 4 years, and then if it doesn't appeal to me, I will top graft it. But sure, heirloom varieties are, some of them are quite good. Newton Pippin is a very old American variety that's still very, very good, and Roxbury Russet. And there are some that aren't so good. So, but it depends, because an apple can take the terroir of where it's planted, just like a grape. The soil composition, the chemicals in the soil, the microclimate, you can have a very different apple. In fact, I do from opposite ends of my property. But an apple grown in coastal Humboldt County might be much better in the Midwest or the upper Midwest or the Hudson River Valley. It just depends on the climate and the circumstances.
With the different types of apples, I mean, you hear about apples, it's an eating apple, it's a cooking apple, it's a saucing apple, it's a pie apple. And so some of these old varieties may have been cider apples.
No, the old varieties that are cider apples, you will spit out and not swallow. They're called spitters, yes.
Oh, okay.
In southern England and on the Normandy coast in France, they're very sophisticated about their ciders because they're relatively cool climates and apples grew well there. I do have some specialty cider apples, and I do make specialty cider from those apples. They're considered single variety cider apples, but of course they can be blended, but you can make a very good cider just out of one variety. And if you were to bite one, it would be like sucking on a tea bag.
That astringent.
Very bitter, very sharp, very astringent, yes. But getting back to your point about the usually the cooking apple means that it has less moisture in it, so it doesn't fall apart as easily when it's cooked. So a cooking apple will have a lighter specific gravity. When you lift it up, it'll be a little lighter for its size compared to, say, a juicing apple.
Because it won't have all that juice in it.
Right.
So about the saucing apples, they are a more moist, juicy apple? Is that
right? They would just be a type of a cooking apple.
Okay.
Rome Beauty is an old cooking apple. My orchard has Rhode Island Greening, which was a colonial cooking apple. That was named around 1620. A very good cooking apple. I started an apple CSA this last year and passed out some Rhode Island Greenings to people who wanted to cook with it and got back very good reports. But they're known for having a little more firm flesh, which is usually a function of slightly less juice. Gravenstein, though, is considered sort of an all-purpose eating, juicing, and cooking, sort of a miracle apple. But most of these apples, like a Rome Beauty that I mentioned, it's not really for fresh eating, but mainly for cooking.
I wanted to talk specifically about the apples that you brought into the Master Food Preserver program because they were that beautiful shade of red. And those apples came from Albert Etter's, is that correct?
Yes, that was a variety called Pink Pearl, and that was developed by Etter and released around the early 1940s. Albert Etter was quite a character in the fruit breeding world, and he has other varieties. I think also I've got several varieties. Waltana is considered an Etter variety, and Wixen. Also, there's a variety called Etter's Gold, fairly widely cultivated, at least up here in Northern California. I think Pink Pearl probably is his most nationally recognized apple, followed by the Wixen, which is a very small sweet apple that makes a good cider.
Where do people find some of these heirloom varieties?
Well, you know, that's very tough because most of the places I did business with years ago are not in business anymore. And so it's getting tougher and tougher and tougher to find the scion wood to graft. You will not be able to go and buy a tree of some of these varieties, although some of the local nurseries will have Pink Pearl trees. And some Waltanas, I don't know if they have Wixens, but you can go to your favorite nursery and see if they can order some. But otherwise, you have to graft your own, and that's pretty much what I've done. I took a drafting class 20-some years ago at Sandy Bar Nursery in Orleans. Got scion wood from people who were addicted to apples. Uh-huh. There was one guy in Oregon who had a list of something like 3,000 different apples on it. And you just get the scion wood and graft your own, and that's sort of sad, but that's the way that we are evolving towards.
I know, losing some of those skills, I think,
yes,
in terms
yes.
of grafting.
Plus, we're a lot more mobile as a society. If you're going to stay in a place 5, 6, 7 years, that's about how long it would take from rootstock to graft to your first apple. So there's that too going on in our society.
Now, what does the rootstock contribute to the plant?
The size of the tree. It doesn't affect the size of the apple at all. And there's a whole range of rootstocks from the seedling rootstock, which is basically an apple seed that's been planted that'll grow to a full-size tree. And there are some little mini dwarfs where you could reach down and pick up an apple. So you get fewer apples per square foot of orchard, but they're the same size. You don't sacrifice
right,
size.
Right, the apples don't grow smaller just because they're on a smaller rootstock.
That's right. It's just the tree that grows smaller.
And what is the scion wood?
The scion wood is the fruiting wood. There are two pieces. There's the rootstock. And then the scion wood that you put in, a scion wood is roughly the size of a number two pencil that you would carve out. And then you sort of nurture it along, and hopefully it grows and doesn't die, and animals don't snap it off, and you get fruit from it someday.
How many pounds of apples do you produce out of your orchard?
This last year, I picked about 3,500 pounds. I had a lot more than that I donated to the local critters. We have a sharing arrangement. So between the cider that I make and my CSA, I probably used up close to about 3,500 pounds.
If people want to get your apples, you said you have a CSA. How might people get a hold of you to become part of your CSA?
Well, my CSA, I think I'm going to probably max out at maybe 30 members, and I already have a dozen from this last year. So if you would like to be contacted, then drop me a line at P.O. Box 1014 in Eureka, 95502. They drop me a line. I'll contact them.
Well, this is Jennifer Bell, and I've had the pleasure of talking with David Martinek, and we've been talking about heirloom apples and apples in his beautiful orchard. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Grapes and the cakes, hey, come on to my house, come on.
If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call the listener comment line at 826-6089. You can hear this broadcast again at the KHSU website under archived programs at khsu.org. This program is also available on iTunes. Food for Thought is produced in the KHSU studios located at Humboldt State University. Our engineer is Jessica Eden, and producer is Jennifer Bell. Join us again next Friday on KHSU for another edition of Food for Thought during the KHSU homepage.